Bolt after bolt rained from the cloud, tearing away layers of their protection. When a single bolt finally broke through, a hurled sword emerged to answer it. The Carvenzi floated to the side, dodging the hurled weapon without difficulty.
Really? Throwing swords? You do know that's not what they're for, right?
The stone creature chuckled, forming a sphere of electricity in its hands. It was still looking down at the threats it had seen before. It had no way of seeing the crimson-skinned humanoid descending through the air, clutching the weapon that had just been thrown. Lightning sparked in the Carvenzi's hands and died as the burning blade slammed into its back. The weapon, however, left only the slightest mark. The Carvenzi spun in midair, grabbing its new attacker and hurling the crimson figure into the inferno below. Meanwhile, the remains of the protective dome vanished. Sarah pointed a finger at the creature above.
Bind!
The swirling pattern of runes engulfed the Carvenzi, but it just laughed, turning its head toward her.
Really? You're doing that now?
Sarah grinned. All part of the long-term plan. You're cute, but you keep getting distracted. Its eyes narrowed, apparently noticing at the same time as I did that Derek was no longer anywhere in sight. It, most likely, also noticed the hole in the bottom of the stage around the same time as I did. It spun around just as Derek burst upward from another newly formed hole in the stage, shooting upward high enough to grab the Carvenzi in a bear hug. From my perspective, that seemed terribly unwise. I, however, also missed the crimson figure that was standing, completely unharmed in the flames.
Master has commanded for you to burn.
The flames that had spread across the stage began to flicker, as if blowing in the wind, and then surged inward, gathering around the crimson figure.
Delsis will obey.
The crimson figure began to rise from the stage, the residual flames surrounding him like a whirlwind. The Carvenzi turned toward the sound, grabbing Derek and hurling him straight at Delsis. Delsis waved a hand and a gust of wind blew Derek off that trajectory. Another rising jet carried the swordsman safely to the ground. The Carvenzi turned toward Delsis and growled.
A weapon bound? How fascinating. Insufficient, but really quite fascinating. Let's see. What was the girl doing earlier? Ah, yes. Permafrost Cascade.
Hundreds of blades of ice appeared around the Carvenzi, vastly outstripping the results of when Sarah had cast the same spell. They shot forward, meeting the incendiary Sirocco around the Delsis. Some of the blades made it through the firestorm. A few of them were sufficient to pierce its chest. Delsis sank down to the stage, fire leaking from its wounds. As more blades arced downward to impact the wounded creature, Sarah waved both hands toward the Carvenzi.
Reverse!
The frozen shards stood still in the air. The Carvenzi turned its gaze toward her.
You lack the strength to turn back my spell, little girl.
She shook, pushing her hands outward as she struggled for control over the spell. I'd seen shapers do that sort of thing before, but I wasn't aware summoners were capable of it. The shards shivered, inching closer to Delsis, who had fallen to a knee. Finally, she smirked and spoke.
I don't have to.
Derek flew upward from the back of the stage, the golden sword back in his hand, its edges glowing bright, and he slashed upward, cutting through the base of one of the Carvenzi's wings.
Ah!
The creature screamed in shock as it fell from the sky, landing hard against the surface of the stage. Derek landed atop it.
An excellent fight. You should be proud.
Then he shoved his gleaming sword into its neck. I winced as the Carvenzi vanished. The crowd erupted in uproarious applause. My feelings were mixed. Had they just killed an intelligent creature for a mere show? I knew summoned creatures worked more like simulacra. They were copies of a person, not a real person. But I still felt a sinking in my gut at the thought. For the moment, though, most of what I felt was relief. Sarah was safe.
Well done, contestants! You have cleared the second round!
More applause.
As you know, normally this would be our final round for the competition. Tonight, however, we are honored by the presence of a special guest.
Oh, no.
Our house summoners are quite exhausted, but our guest is among the most talented in her field. Our audience should know her well, and our contestants should know her even better. Introducing Derek Hartigan's former partner, the incredible Elora Fias.
A woman in a pristine red and gold suit, accompanied by a tall hat and a dueling cane, appeared in the largest box directly above the stage. She was definitely the same woman I'd seen in the memory crystal working with my mother.
Found a replacement for me so quickly, Derek? She's quite lovely, but a little young, even for you.
Oh, Resh, no. This cannot possibly go anywhere good. Derek glanced upward at the box.
Elora, my love, my life, my light! You must be so lonely up in that box all by yourself, without any of your many usual acquaintances to keep you company for the evening. Why don't you come down here and join us?
He snarled.
I'd be glad to give you a proper greeting.
Distracted as you are by my beauty, you seem to have forgotten you were in the midst of a contest. But worry not. I will be here to console you while you recover from my contribution.
Delsis, his wounds no longer streaming fire, finally collapsed on the stage and vanished a moment later. Derek did not spare him a glance, but Sarah rushed and retrieved the sword that fell to the stage in Delsis's absence.
Contestants, prepare yourselves for the final battle!
A faster song emerged from the musician's pit beside the arena, and the arena's barrier walls flashed. Derek glanced at Sarah.
You may want to step out of the ring, Sarah. This is not going to be pretty.
Sarah glanced upward, then back down to Derek.
I'm not pleased with this little lover's quarrel you've dragged me into, but I'm not one to back down from a fight.
The swordsman nodded silently. There was nothing more to say.
Elora steepled her fingers. Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to bear witness to something rare, a summoning of something beyond the mere pittances often strewn across this arena.
She closed her eyes.
You who are born of the serpent, wrought with scales of adamant and bearing claws of fire, I call upon our pact. Visage of venom, hear my voice. Wyvern, I summon you!
A gasp escaped the collective voice of the crowd. They knew, as I did, what she had invoked.
The wyvern,
one of the guardians of the tower. And as she spoke her final word, it appeared. 20 feet of muscle, sinew, and scales. It floated above the stage on serpentine wings, opening its draconic jaws in the air. It screamed, and the room quaked at its voice.
Very well,
Derek glanced upward, flourishing his golden blade.
Shall we begin?
In reply, the creature dove straight down. Derek jumped, landing a glancing strike against its neck. The sword failed to cut through the creature's scales. It responded with a strike from its viciously barbed tail. The swordsman battered the tail aside, but one of the spines along the edge ripped across his chest, drawing blood. He hissed as he fell, clutching at the wound.
Poison!
He spat, clenching his fists as he landed.
I hate poison!
Sarah was not standing idle. She had been finishing an incantation as Derek fought in the air.
Winds, carry upon you blades of ice!
A handful of icy daggers appeared behind her, firing forward. It resembled a weaker version of her permafrost cascade. If she was using it, that meant she was probably too low on mana for her more powerful spell. Not a good sign for fighting something as powerful as the wyvern. The icy knives struck the wyvern's left wing, burrowing holes into the sinews between bones. The monster roared, but remained afloat. The damage wasn't significant enough to render it incapable of flight. Sarah's right hand was shaking heavily. Definitely not a good sign. Derek swung his blade in the air, sending a golden crescent at the creature's wounded wing. It twisted sideways, avoiding the attack, but Derek repeated the gesture and struck it in the opposite side. The wyvern hissed and dove. Derek ran. The wyvern hit the stage, breaking boards where it landed, smashing a path as it surged toward Derek with open jaws. Sarah raised the gauntlet and sent a blast into its side. The visual difference between a burst of gray mana and a blast of transference mana wasn't very obvious. The effect, however, was quite distinct. The wyvern must have weighed 20 times more than a man, but the burst of mana was still sufficient to knock it off course. Its jaws closed around the empty air just to Derek's side. And Derek, never to miss such a perfect window of opportunity, thrust his sword into its neck. Ha! He slammed the palm of his other hand into the pommel of his sword, driving it deeper into the creature's throat. It thrashed wildly as his hand began to glow, sending a surge of golden mana across the blade and blasting a deep hole into the wyvern's neck. Derek grinned, pulling away.
You see that, Alora?
The wyvern's tail smashed into him a moment later, leaving a bloody smear across the stage. The motion carried him all the way out of the ring, and then it rose, roaring. Sarah was alone. The wyvern turned, coughing blood onto the ruined stage. Standing on its two legs, it raised its tail like a scorpion poised to strike.
"Run, Sarah!"
I shouted. I knew there was no chance she could hear me from my position in the stands. The tail shot downward like the thrust of a spear, and Sarah spoke.
"Ogre, I summon you!"
The ogre's hands caught the wyvern's tail, and suddenly I understood. Those binding spells she'd been using weren't to slow the monsters down. She'd been marking the monsters for her later use. The wyvern hissed, pulling its tail free from the ogre's grasp. As strong as the ogre was, it was nowhere near as large or powerful as the wyvern. That didn't stop it from charging the wyvern with fists flailing, though. Sarah fell to a knee, shaking. She looked pale. Too pale. The ogre smashed a fist into the wyvern's jaw. The wyvern recoiled at the blow, but quickly retorted, snapping its fangs around the ogre's arm. Sarah dropped the crimson sword, wiping her forehead.
"One more," she mumbled. "Just one more."
The ogre howled in agony, slamming its free arm into the wyvern's face, but it was doing minimal damage. The wyvern snapped down again, tearing the ogre's injured arm off entirely. The ogre fell to its knees.
"Carvency," Sarah mumbled, raising both hands. "I summon you."
The winged man appeared at her side as she slumped against the floor.
"Really? You're summoning me now?" he sighed, turning toward the wyvern. "And I suppose you want me to handle this for you?"
Sarah twitched her head in what could barely pass for a nod.
"Well, I suppose it's something to do."
The wyvern's tail descended, spearing the ogre through the chest. The ogre twitched once, then vanished into nothing. The Carvenzi shook its head, gathering flames in its hands.
"I was hoping the brute would have lasted a moment longer, but I suppose this will have to do."
The wyvern turned its head towards Sarah. The Carvenzi's hand shot out.
"Tell me, wyvern, what's your opinion on fire?"
The stage, with the exception of a small patch around Sarah, turned red. And the wyvern, as powerful as it was not intelligent enough to see the danger. Flames rippled upward from the stage, and the wyvern's bulky form was bombarded with dozens of blasts. It howled into the air, its wings flapping to carry it above the danger. The Carvenzi shook its head, lifting the burning sword that Sarah had discarded.
"Now, how does this thing work? Do I just throw it like so?"
He hurled the sword at the wyvern's already injured wing, and it embedded deeply. Fire began to spread across the surface where it impacted. The Carvenzi frowned.
No flame person this time.
He glanced down at Sarah's shivering form.
Did I do something wrong? I must have done something wrong.
Finish it,
Sarah mumbled.
Right, right. You know, you really look quite unwell. You probably should see a healer or something. You humans are so fond of those.
The Carvenzi took to the air, flying high above the writhing wyvern. You really are quite a disappointment, Wyvern. I expected better from one of the Serpent's children, but alas, few can match my own splendor.
It gestured to the air above it.
This should put an end to your struggles, I think.
A dark cloud gathered at the top of the stage, electricity crackling in its midst. The Carvenzi turned away from the Wyvern, bowing in the air to the crowd.
Enjoy the light show, humans!
Lightning struck from a dozen angles at once. The Wyvern hissed, its flesh sizzling where each impact had struck. It rolled over, raising its wings toward the lightning in a blocking gesture.
Really? You need more? The Carvenzi sighed. Fine. You're resilient at least, I'll give you that. More lightning it is.
More flashes from the cloud, dozens upon dozens of them. Finally, the Wyvern lay still and began to fade. Sarah reached up with a shaking hand, muttering a single word.
Bind.
Symbols whirled around the creature's fading form, and I laughed so hard it nearly brought tears to my eyes. She was half dead down there, and she was still thinking about adding another monster to her summoning collection. Maybe we really were family after all. As the Wyvern faded, the audience stood in uproarious applause. I rushed out of my booth, passed a guard, and tried desperately to find the stairs. I needed to make sure that Sarah was safe. It took a considerable amount of arguing, but I eventually managed to get one of the guards to let me into the recovery room, where both Sarah and Derek were waiting. Sarah was lying on a sofa, shivering uncontrollably. A man I didn't recognize sat in a chair next to her. Derek was sitting in another chair, his feet up on a footrest.
Ah, Corin! Thanks for coming down to see us! Wasn't that an incredible show?
I punched him in the face. Derek fell backward at the impact, clutching his face.
What the... You brought a first-year student into this pit with only minutes of preparation?
Yes, she agreed to it, but she couldn't have possibly known the degree of danger that she was in. I raised a hand and pointed.
Look at her, Derek! Look at the condition she's in!
Derek narrowed his eyes, still clutching his nose. It was bleeding. Good.
That's on you, too. You're the one I asked first.
Yeah, and I probably deserve more than what I just gave you. She can punch me as much as she feels like. For the moment, though, I'm going to see if I can get her warm, and you can help, rather than sitting on your ass. Derek clenched his fists, pulling one back like he was going to strike me, but he slowly growled and unclenched them, putting his hands back down.
You're right.
He lowered his head.
There was no way either of you were ready for that. I didn't think that Alora... But never mind. That's not important. Let's see to your sister.
I nodded curtly. The man next to her turned out to be a mender, but he'd quickly identified that her problem was from mana loss, and there was little he could do beyond making sure her condition didn't deteriorate further. I glanced at Derek. Your weapons. Can you summon that golden entity, the one that transferred mana to her earlier? He shook his head.
I have to store mana in the weapons for weeks to get enough to summon them in physical form. She'll be long recovered before I can call on Tavare again.
I took off my coat, draping it over Sarah. She barely responded. I glanced at the mender. Do you carry mana potions here? He shook his head.
No, they expire quickly. I do know an alchemist nearby, but those potions are expensive.
My head turned to Derek. The winnings! They must be substantial. Derek nodded.
She'll be quite wealthy when she recovers, at least by first-year standards.
We're going to buy her mana potions, enough for a quick and comfortable recovery, with your share of the money. He glowered at me for a moment, but let out a resigned sigh.
Fine. I will do this as recompense, but after this, no more punching?
I nodded. Not for me. I can't make any promises about what she's going to do when she gets up.
Acceptable.
The medic gave us directions. Derek and I both boggled at the cost of mana potions. 20 silver for a single draft. But the winnings were more than sufficient to cover the 3 potions I decided she'd probably need. Sarah was completely unconscious by the time we returned.
Her shivering had stopped, but the mender assured me that she was alive. With the mender's help, we gingerly fed her a sip of the first potion and waited. I sat her head on my lap, like mother had done for me when we were children, and after hours passed with no sign of change, I fell asleep.
Corin! Corin, wake up!
My eyes blinked their way open. Derek was sitting next to me. I almost punched him again. My lack of punching ended up being mostly due to my arm being asleep. Sarah was on top of it, still unconscious. I didn't remember the non-punching agreement until at least several moments later. Derek? He nodded.
Good, you're awake. I need to go. I've been here all night and my family will be concerned.
I glanced down at Sarah. Has she woken up at all? Derek shook his head.
No. No sign of it yet. The medic left a few hours ago. He's convinced she's on the mend. We fed her another sip of the first draft, but it's hard to get anything into her while she's asleep. You can give her the full potions when she wakes up, but she'll need water with it.
No. He blinked.
No? No what?
You don't get to leave without apologizing to her. Derek sighed.
Look, I did stay all night, and I'm quite sorry for what happened. It was irresponsible of me to drag you two into this with so little warning, but I needed a partner, and...
Did you know Elora was going to be summoning that beast?
No.
His tone was firm.
All I knew was that she refused to join me in the arena tonight. I had no idea she was planning this charade.
I tilted my head down. And did you learn she wasn't joining you in the arena before or after you asked me to come to your show? Derek winced.
Before? But I thought I could find another friend, a veteran who could take her place. I just ran out of time.
And you were desperate enough to put children in danger. He sighed.
I was confident I could handle it myself. Summoned monsters are usually considerably weaker than real ones. I normally don't even have to use my bound weapons. With them, I thought this would be trivial, even without Elora's help. Obviously, I was mistaken.
I could understand his perspective, but after seeing the degree of danger Sarah had been in, I wasn't going to let him off lightly. You should tell her that.
I will! I can come back! But I have people who are going to be worried about me. I think you, of all people, should understand that.
It was a low blow, but he wasn't wrong. I may have sounded a bit uncharacteristically snarly with my response. Fine. You can tell your family that you're safe, but you're coming back. And if we're gone by the time you get back here, you're going to come to the campus and apologize to her directly. My eyes narrowed, and you will not ask her to join you again.
I understand. That is quite reasonable, given what happened.
I sighed, putting a hand on Sarah's forehead. She mumbled something unintelligible and rolled over, but didn't wake. Go on. I'll see you soon enough.
I'll have the owners bring you her share of the winnings.
I nodded. I wasn't going to thank him for that. I turned my head away, and Derek left us in silence. Chapter 15. Recovery. By the next morning, Sarah was almost ready to move. Her legs wobbled as she tried to stand, though, and I had to catch her from falling backward.
I want to go home.
Sarah frowned, burying her face in her hands. I stood up awkwardly, putting a hand on her head.
I'll make it happen, then. Don't try to get up without me.
She grumbled a little bit, but finally slumped back down on the couch. It took me about a half hour to find someone in management and convince them to send a couple of the staff to help me carry Sarah home. We were fortunate that injuries and mana exhaustion were common enough events that they always had overnight staff. While we were heading down to pick up Sarah, one of the staff members, a bouncer from the look of him, remarked,
"At least she didn't get torn up like the last team."
"What happened to them?"
"Ogan nearly tore one of the guy's arms off, then smashed his partner in the face. Had to rush them both to the hospital."
That revelation did wonders for my mood. I decided that next time I'd put my gauntlet back on before punching Derek. All in all, three of us took turns carrying Sarah until we managed to get her back to her dorm. And by taking turns, I mean the two of them took turns and I supervised. I wasn't strong enough to carry Sarah more than a block at best. The medic deemed her stable before we left, but advised me to keep a close eye on her and to take her to the hospital if she started coughing blood. A lovely image, that. All in all, we were both in a pretty terrible mood by the time we set Sarah down in her own bed. She looked pale, like she'd suffered serious blood loss, but I hadn't seen any bleeding. I thanked the two staff members that helped carry her. It wasn't their fault she'd gotten hurt, and grabbed her some food from the cafeteria. By the time I got back, she'd fallen back to sleep. A few hours later, Sarah woke in a ravenous state. I handed her the food I'd retrieved. It wasn't fresh, but I still deemed it edible. She devoured it. "How are you feeling?" I tried to put a smile on my face, but it was one of those obviously fake ones that I knew she'd see right through. "Terrible?" She took another sip of the mana potion that I'd put next to her food. "This tastes like burning." At least she was feeling strong enough to complain. "You're going to be drinking that lovely fire for a while. Your arm is in the worst shape, but it looks like you were drawing from other mana sources, too." She shrugged. "Maybe." "Which ones? It's important that I know in case I need to get you to a hospital." Sarah took another sip of the potion, grimacing, and then whispered her reply. "All of them?" "What was that? I'm not sure I heard you." "I said all of them, Corin. And before you get into a lecture..." I folded my arms. "You seriously risked drawing mana from your heart and your brain, Sarah? That's dangerous enough for people who have attunements in their locations. You could have killed yourself." She slammed the potion bottle down hard. "I am not in a mood for this argument, Corin. When your arms are hurting too much to move them, and your legs are drained to the point where you can't stand, you'll do what you need to do." My jaw tightened. I wanted to argue, but this wasn't the time. "You're hurt, so I'm not going to fight with you. But I'm not comfortable with you pushing yourself like that." "You don't have to be. That's the great part about this being my body, Corin. I can do whatever I want with it." She jabbed a piece of egg with her fork. "And I do appreciate your concern. I really do. But I'm not a child. And I'm not your retainer. You can't give me orders." I leaned back in my chair. "That's fine. I know I can't order you around. But you're my sister. So I was worried about you." Sarah's eyes narrowed. "Sister, eh?" She took a bite of the egg, setting her fork down. "I think this might be the first time you've called me that without sounding sarcastic." I ran a hand through my hair. "You're probably right. I'm sorry. I'll try to be twice as sarcastic next time to make up for the lapse." It took days before Sarah was walking unassisted again, which meant I got to spend a lot of quality time with her. Normally, the mana in her legs would have recovered in hours, but she drained herself so significantly that her body was having to prioritize what it restored first. The first mana potion helped speed the process along a bit, getting her to the point where she could stand, but she refused to drink the other two, claiming that they made her feel nauseated. I looked into that a little. It was apparently a pretty common side effect. I decided to dig into how mana potions worked a little later. They wouldn't offer permanent improvements like the enhancement elixirs I had tried to research before, but I knew it'd still be useful to figure out how to manufacture them. We were heading to the dining hall when it occurred to me to ask a critical question. "Did they ever end up paying you?" She shook her head. "I got a letter explaining that I'd get my cut in about 3 weeks. It's pretty significant, though." "How significant is pretty significant? 200 silver sigils?" I let out an appreciative whistle. "I've never had money like that." She chuckled. "No kidding. I don't think I've ever had a quarter of that. I'm still trying to figure out what to do with it." "Might I suggest investing in one of your favorite enchanters?" Sarah let out a snort. "I'll think about it. It does mean I can afford to have you make me a gauntlet, at least." "I could make you something much better than that gauntlet with 200 silver. But it'd be smart for me to practice on some smaller things first, so I was sort of serious about the investment." "I'll think about it. For now, food." It was her first day back at the dining hall. I'd been bringing food back to her room while she'd been unable to make the journey, so she set into the hall with reckless abandon. By the time we sat down, she was carrying 2 full trays, and I was carrying another tray for her in addition to my own. There was 0 chance she'd be eating all this, but fortunately the dining hall did let us pack up any leftovers, which, by the look of it, would be virtually everything. We hadn't talked much about the fighting. She'd been pretty miserable during the recovery, so I tried to keep us focused on other topics. Now that she was back on her feet, though, I had some questions. That binding thing you were doing, that's how summoners get their new spells? She looked contemplative, even as she eviscerated a potato. Sort of. The binding spell teaches my attunement how to make an inferior copy of whatever I hit with it. It's not like having a real contract with a monster. A real contract is much more versatile.
So, if you can make a copy of something that easily, why don't you have dozens of things you can summon? Wouldn't your teachers just summon things in class for the whole class to copy?
She shook her head. Every binding we make takes up a little bit of our mana, for as long as we maintain the bond. If I had a whole bunch of them, I couldn't summon anything at all, so it's only worth it to keep a few.
Sarah paused, tearing off a piece of bread with her teeth.
We did learn a couple of basic summoning spells in class, but most of the teachers consider bindings worthless, since the monsters are so much weaker than the real thing.
She took a breath.
Most people focus on making real contracts, since they have a similar cost in mana to bindings, but contracts give you more options. For example, if you have a contract, you can draw on the creature you've contracted for power without summoning them. That's how I use my ice spells.
I prodded at my own food, but I wasn't nearly as hungry.
I remember you, or Teft, maybe, saying something about summoning modified versions of things you've contracted.
Yeah, like, if I had a real contract with an ogre and I had some fire mana, I could summon a fire ogre.
She grinned.
A fire ogre. Now I want one.
I rolled my eyes.
Okay, I get the idea. And you're still not going to tell me what your contract is with, right?
Nah.
I picked up a piece of one of her potatoes with my fork.
Well, if you're going to be that way...
Hey, that was my 3rd favorite potato! You give it back!
I popped it into my mouth.
Sarah put a hand over her heart, giving me a lamenting expression. Alas, it was so young.
I chewed. And salty.
Sarah tightened her lips. I do want to tell you what my summoned monster is, but I can't.
I raised an eyebrow at that.
What do you mean?
She sighed.
It's part of the contract. The creature is... eccentric. I'm not allowed to tell anyone I have a contract with it until it agrees that I'm ready.
I blinked. That seems like a pretty bad deal.
Sarah shook her head. No, it's a great deal. You'll see why eventually, but in the meantime, I can't tell you what it is.
Fine, fine. But it gives you ice magic in the meantime?
She nodded. Yeah, and some degree of control over ice magic, which is pretty useful.
I'd noticed that when she managed to stop the Carvensi's spell in the arena, but I hadn't realized the ability was from her contracted monster.
Interesting.
So, different contracts offer different benefits in addition to summoning. Could you contract an ogre to make yourself physically stronger?
She made a hmm noise.
Maybe. I'm not actually sure about that. I've only looked into summoned monsters that give me enhanced magical abilities, but... it sounds possible, yeah.
Could that be how Derek was so strong?
She lifted up a cup of juice and took a long sip. Ah, something that isn't mana potion. Delicious.
After a brief moment of savoring the beverage, she continued.
Anyway, no, he's not a summoner. But I saw him, not sure what exactly his attunement is, but it's different. I think he stores monsters in items, then gets power from the objects. He wouldn't tell me about it before the match. He just said he could take care of things. It was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I'd be pretty frustrated if someone who I was fighting alongside didn't tell me about all their abilities.
I gave her an exaggerated wink.
Oh, shush, Corrin. When I can summon it, you'll be one of the first to see, okay?
I nodded.
Acceptable. If you want to see it any faster, you could make me a mana storage device.
We spent much of the rest of the meal talking about enchanting options. All in all, it was a pleasant change of pace. I lifted up the product of 3 weeks of agonizing labor, a single crystal of gray mana, still trapped within the practice shell.
I might have slightly overestimated myself when I'd planned to figure out how to make the more advanced version in a week. Even so, I was proud of my results. Over the following few days, I finished filling the remaining practice molds. It was considerably easier after my first success, but I still had a pretty significant problem. I always stopped as soon as I started feeling a headache. I knew from speaking to various diviners that I was being overly cautious. After a cursory test of my mana levels after finishing one of the crystals, I knew I was nowhere near the point where making one was going to put me in danger. But I remembered what had happened to Sarah after the fight, and how long it had taken her to recover. And, more importantly, I remembered what happened to my great-grandfather. The story of his broken mind echoed in my thoughts every time I considered using any significant amount of mind mana. The more I tried to fight the thoughts out of my head, the more I reinforced them. But I needed to make my attunement stronger. I was nowhere near Carnelian yet, and I was rapidly running out of time to get there. I knew I'd never make enough progress if I kept stopping at the slightest hint of discomfort. And that was why, if I couldn't scour the fear from my mind, I needed to beat it through other means. I needed to outsmart it. And with that goal in mind, I began my next project. I handed the four completed crystals over to Vellum.
Oh, you're still enrolled here? I thought you might have dropped out from shame a couple weeks ago since these took you so long.
I grinned. Sorry to disappoint you, Professor. I do have other things to keep me busy. That was about 70% an excuse, but a fraction of truth was good enough to keep the smile on my face. She just shook her head.
And I suppose you'll be wanting the manor out of these?
Yeah, and I'd like to see the extraction process if you don't mind.
Very well.
She nodded, laying out the crystals in a line on the table. She opened a drawer, reached in to withdraw something, and hit the first crystal in the line with a hammer. The quartz casing exploded, chips flying everywhere. As I gawked, Vellum took a deep breath and then smashed the next one, and the next, and the next. At least the mana crystals themselves remained intact.
Ah, much better.
She set the hammer down on the table amidst the quartz powder and debris. I stared blankly.
I thought you said I wasn't supposed to damage the casing.
Of course not, dear. I enjoy doing it myself far too much to let you do it. Let an old woman bask in one of her few remaining joys in life, hmm?
I sighed, taking a seat in the chair across from her. She was obviously having a little fun at my expense, but that was tolerable, as long as I got the results. I reached across the table and began to retrieve my hard-earned crystals. Of course, Professor, I would never want to deprive you of such simple pleasures. You wouldn't happen to have any more practice crystals that I could use?
Oh, no, that was the last batch. You can buy them at some of the supply stores on campus, though. They're cheap, or I never would have given you any.
Right. I rubbed my forehead, feeling the grit of powdered quartz dust that had stuck on my fingers when I picked up the mana crystals. I'll keep working on those, but I do have another question in the meantime.
Oh? Need some advice on how to woo a young lady, perhaps?
I blinked. Where did she get these absurd ideas?
No, Professor. A rune-related question, and I think you're the only one here who might know the answer.
With those younger ladies, flattery will get you everywhere. But with me, Corin, you're better off just keeping me entertained. I do hope this is an interesting question.
I nodded. Is it possible to use runes to perform mathematical calculations? She steepled her fingers.
That is an interesting question. If you're thinking about making a magical device to make it easier to perform math in class, however, I am afraid that the designs required are quite complex, and most common methods are patented, so it's not something you could easily make and sell.
Huh. I hadn't been thinking of something of that level of complexity, but it was good information to have.
Nothing quite like that. Basically, I'm going to have a divination rune that checks for a value, and then I need to run it through an equation and display the resulting number on a surface. I found the runes for the first step, and I think I know how to make the number display,
but I couldn't find anything on the middle part. Vellum leaned back in her chair.
That's not terribly difficult. You want to run the number through the exact same equation every time?
I scratched my chin. Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure the underlying equation stays stable, but I admit I haven't dug into it very deeply yet. For the first time in my recollection, Vellum looked stymied. I felt a pang of victory. I think I'd actually managed to confuse her. Whatever is this for? I tapped the attunement mark on my forehead. You know people go to the divinatory periodically to learn how much mana they can use safely from each part of their body? She waved a hand dismissively.
Important for students, certainly. Most advanced attuned learn to evaluate that by feel.
But that's a flawed approach. It was a bit of a provocative statement, but I was confident. Even experts sometimes push themselves beyond their limits, sometimes without realizing it, and suffer permanently for it. Fortunately, she didn't seem offended, just contemplative.
And you think you can solve this by...
Every time that I've gone to the divinatory, they've cast a single spell to check each part of my body, then scribbled down some math and given me the result. I think they're checking the total amount of mana flowing through each area, then running it through a simple formula to tell me how much is safe to use. I could make items that do that.
What's the point? Making a permanent item that would mean spending a significant amount of money on a service that's inexpensive or free. It's not worth saving a few minutes.
I shook my head. That's not the point of the device. It's just the first part. We have it measure the user's mana at rest and store that number, and then make it visible on a surface. Then we have it actively monitor the user's mana, tracking how their current mana compares to the first number. We show a second number, the amount of remaining mana the wearer can still spend safely, next to the maximum value.
Vellum lifted a hand to her chin, twisting her lips. It could be done. You'd want to display it as a fraction, something like 10 mana left out of 20, to make it useful. But I don't know if I like it. It could make the wearer rely on the device rather than their own judgment.
I shrugged at that. If nothing else, it might help keep someone cognizant of the small mana uses that they aren't aware of from day-to-day activities. I still have no idea how rapidly using my attunement drains my mana, for example. How long can I use it safely? I have no idea. None of my books talk about it.
That's something they should have explained in your first weeks of class. You probably just weren't paying attention.
Maybe, but I doubt I'm the only one. And when someone knows dozens of spells and they're in the middle of the tower, can you honestly say they're tracking their mana usage accurately? She shook her head.
No, they're probably not. But I'm not certain taking the time to check a device would be beneficial. You'd have to press it against whichever section of the body you want to measure, then look at wherever you're displaying the numbers. Not necessarily practical in a fight.
I was thinking something wearable, like a pocket watch on a chain. You could just grab it out of your pocket, press it to your hand or forehead or whatever, and then look at the number. I agree that might still be too dangerous in the middle of a fight, but maybe between two rooms? I don't know about you, but... I think I'd find that information valuable.
Perhaps. But you must understand that people develop a degree of pride about being able to keep track of their own mana. I'm not sure adults would value a device that makes them look incapable. I don't know how you'd market it.
Pride. I hadn't thought about that. But it actually made this even easier. I don't know why I didn't think of that earlier. But you're absolutely right, Professor. Checking a pocket watch every room would make you look paranoid. That's why we don't put it in a pocket. If mana management makes people proud? I made a sweeping gesture with my hands. Why not tell the whole world how powerful you are? We don't tuck the device away. We make it a necklace or a wristwatch, something that shows openly and visibly so you can show off how much mana you have. It could be a status symbol, like how some people like to show off their strongest attunement.
Vellum wrinkled her nose. That's precisely the opposite of what some people would want. You know that traditionally nobles wear a glove to cover their attunements and hide their strength. Weren't you wearing a glove yourself when we first met?
I nodded. And that's precisely how we'll make a profit on it. Pride. We can tell the younger generation that, rather than hide their power out of fear, They should flaunt it.
Her eyes narrowed. And if you make it competitive, even older attuned might feel compelled to do the same, to prove that they're stronger than these upstart children.
Professor Vellum nodded contemplatively.
It's a clever idea. Most clever ideas never go anywhere, but I can see some potential here. So before you sell any, you're going to patent it.
I blinked.
What? This is perhaps the most important lesson that you're going to learn from me. Anything of sufficient value, and I do mean anything, provokes greed. If you think you could sell more than a handful of these, you need to protect yourself. Patenting a design can be intimidating, and the paperwork is awful, but you need to do it.
I frowned. And if there's already a patent out there?
Then you have the dubious honor of coming up with a brilliant idea that someone else already thought of. You'll find that's far more common than developing anything truly unique.
But if it is unique, and I do get a patent, then we, young Corin Cadence, are going to make a great deal of money.
I spent the next 2 weeks working on my first model of the device, and my second when the first one failed. I'd misunderstood how to use one of the runes, which made the calculation always evaluate to zero. Oops. Professor Vellum was surprisingly enthusiastic about helping. I'd never seen her take any serious interest in one of my projects, but she had me check in every few days with a status update, and even made me some of the crystals that I needed. I didn't have anywhere near enough mental mana to make the analysis runes myself, and I couldn't afford them. But she handled that personally, and after all that effort, it worked. I had a silvery disc the size of my palm attached to a chain with a fraction displayed on it. 31 of 31. The last thing it had measured was my own mental mana. I had gone up a bit in the last few weeks as a result of my practice. That puts me at rank A in quartz. Finally! I'm still a long way from carnelian, but I'm making some real progress. I wasn't going to celebrate prematurely. I went to the divinatory and had them run the standard tests to confirm my results. They told me my safe mana usage would be 32. Close enough. Probably a rounding error. I hadn't quite figured out how to get the device to round yet, so fractions of a mana point were simply ignored. After confirming that it worked for my mental mana, I checked the rest of my body. And those were all wrong. That didn't keep me stuck for very long. After asking a few questions, I realized my problem. I was always running the same formula, which I'd found in a book about evaluating safe mana usage for the mind specifically. Every body part had a different safe tolerance. That was a set value plus a percentage of your maximum amount. Apparently, as your mana pool got bigger, your body used more and more on routine bodily functions. It made a sort of sense. So if I wanted this to work properly, I needed it to run a different formula depending on what body part I was checking. That was considerably more difficult. I needed to add an extra stage where it detected the type of mana, then branched out to running different equations based on the type. The device's complexity, and thus its cost, went up considerably. The beloved profit margins that I'd been harboring in my imagination shrank. Still, after another few days, I managed to get it working with every part of my body. That made me beam with pride, even if I couldn't expect as much profit. At the end of the week, I'd finished a second functional device, which I gave to Vellum. When she used it for a cursory test, I got a glimpse at one of the measurements she ran on her hand. 2,565 of 2,565. And for the first time, I understood just how far I had to grow. She grinned when she saw me gawking, set the device down and said, "Well, dear, now that the easy part is over, it's time for the paperwork." She was right, of course. Headaches from using my attunement? I could deal with them. Existential terror at the possibility of destroying my own mind? Pretty much routine at this point. Doing paperwork for the government? Now that was brutal. All told, I spent more than 4 weeks on what I was calling my Mana Watch project. I started wearing it around the campus. Fortunately, basic jewelry wasn't explicitly disallowed in our uniform guidelines. I got a lot of odd stares and a handful of questions. Sarah was one of the first to comment, of course.
I know you've never been one for fashion, Corin, but that thing is such an affront to the concept that I'm a little worried for you. I could see fashion manifesting itself in anger just to extract vengeance for the crime you've perpetrated.
I chuckled. You're just jealous that you don't have a masterpiece of modern art like this. But for the low price of, how much did you say you made in the arena? Like 200 silver? You could have one that's almost as amazing as mine. She rolled her eyes.
I've always liked to donate to the needy, but I think you're beyond my help.
Don't worry, Sarah. Your affection is all I've ever needed. I knew it'd be a while before the patent paperwork went through. Months, probably. So I wasn't going to start selling them yet. Instead, I just made use of my own. I'd activate it with a flare of mana, set it to check the mana in my head, and then set it down while I began to work. I still had 24 of 31 mana remaining when I started getting my headache. I'd been stopping far before I was in any risk. Even with that knowledge, my terror at the idea of causing myself harm meant I wasn't willing to risk spending anywhere close to the maximum that the device was telling me. Sure, it was irrational. I knew that the values that the formula gave us were already designed to give us wiggle room for safety before we caused ourselves any permanent harm. Unfortunately, when I contemplated the consequences of pushing myself, it put me into a state of panic that no degree of conscious knowledge could counter. The Mana Watch served a valuable purpose, though. With it, I managed to steel myself sufficiently to go down to half what the device told me would be safe, and that meant spending almost more than 3 times as much mental mana than I ever had before. Regularly. Several times a day. After all, my mental mana recovered fast. Any mana directly connected to an attunement would recover much more quickly than normal mana would. Within another week, I'd upped my maximum from 31 to 40. I was still behind where I should have been, roughly 17 weeks into the year, but finally, I had some chance of eventually catching up. I was in the middle of trying to form a mana crystal without a quartz case when I heard a knock on the door. A conundrum. If I got up to answer, I'd lose all my progress. The mana I was channeling into my palm would evaporate almost immediately when I stopped concentrating on maintaining the crude mana shell around it. I settled for a middle ground.
Who's there? Corin! It's Patrick!
I groaned, watching the half-formed crystal in my palm flake and disintegrate as I released my focus.
Be right there.
I pushed myself to my feet, still mourning the loss of the closest thing to success I'd managed so far. I had a pretty good store of crystals I'd built inside quartz molds at this point, but the molds, while cheap, were almost as valuable as the crystals I was making. Rather than selling the crystals directly, I'd been making simple practice items with the crystals, but none of them were carnelian level, and thus they weren't likely to sell. I opened the door, offering Patrick a wave. He must have seen the exhaustion on my face because he frowned when he looked at me.
Everything okay?
I nodded wearily.
Yeah, just been stressed with one of my projects. Making another mana necklace thing?
I shook my head. Trying to figure out how to make mana crystals without a mold.
What for?
It hadn't occurred to me that the answer might not be completely obvious.
So I can make us better magic stuff. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Here, your sister wanted me to give this to you.
He reached into a bag on his hip, pulling out a smaller pouch and offering it to me. I accepted the bag, lifting it curiously and hearing the clink of metal.
Running Sarah's errands now? Patrick chuckled. Not exactly. Can I come in?
Yeah, of course. I gestured to my room magnanimously.
My home is your home.
Patrick chuckled weakly in reply, coming in and planting himself on my bed.
About that, actually. Sort of.
I closed the door behind him, raising an eyebrow.
What, you looking to move in? I know having a room near Roland must be grating, but not that. I mean, you're not wrong.
He grinned, continuing.
But that's not why I'm here. First, check out the goods in there.
I opened the pouch, pouring it out. A few coins dropped into my hand. Gold coins. What the...
Sarah finally got paid for that whole stage thing she did. I guess they told her to set a big chunk aside for taxes, but she still got more money than I've ever seen out of it. That's about half of it, I think. 60 or so silver worth in gold coins. She wants you to make her something. Should be a note in there, too.
Ah, her first hint of wealth, and she's already sending people to do her bidding. Oh, Sarah. Mad from power at such a young age. Or maybe there was another explanation.
I felt like a bit of a jerk for not checking on her more frequently. Is she feeling okay? That survival match took a lot out of her.
Patrick glanced from side to side, nervously.
Oh, yeah, she's fine. Got a bit of a cough, but the mender said she's recovering. I volunteered to bring the coins for her because, I wanted to ask you something. And to do something nice for her.
I still wasn't seeing where this was going.
Okay. I could kind of use your advice. You aren't, seeing Sarah, are you?
I blinked. Rapidly.
No? I mean, I know it's recent, but she's supposed to be my family now, right? That's good. I mean, you two were always close when you were younger, and I thought maybe there was something, like, romantic.
I waved a hand to cut him off. It was never like that. At least, not for me. She was supposed to be trained to be one of my retainers. We were close friends. We still are. Kind of like my friendship with you, actually. I still wasn't clear where this line of questioning was leading. Why would my feelings for Sarah be relevant?
Oh, great. That's... Well, you see, I've been thinking about asking Sarah to the winter ball.
Oh. Oh. I laughed, to which Patrick's expression turned to utter horror.
You... Oh. I don't have a chance, do I? Is it really that funny?
His cheeks flared crimson. I waved both hands.
Oh, no! Sorry, Patrick. I was laughing at myself for completely missing what you were getting at until you hit me over the head with it. I never realized you had any interest in Sarah.
I paused, scratching my chin. I never really asked either of them about how they'd been getting along in the years I was away. Honestly, I didn't really ask either of them about how they'd been doing in general. I need to be better about that. Either way, I can't see how Sarah would have a problem with Patrick just asking. Having reached my conclusion, I continued.
You're fine. I don't see any problem with you asking her.
Patrick turned his head to the side.
Yeah, except that I'm not good enough.
Okay, definitely not seeing what's going on here. I folded my arms.
How so? You're athletic? You're doing fine in class?
He chuckled.
I'm a nobody, Corin. That might have been fun when we were kids. She was a retainer for a noble house, but that's only one rung above a commoner. Not insurmountable. Now she's like you, a full-on noble.
You really think that still matters these days? He gave me a solemn nod.
Yeah, it really does. It's great that you don't care about that sort of thing. It's something I like about you. Lots of people our age don't care about it. But think about your dad, Corin. Would he approve of Sarah Cadence going to the winter ball with the son of a carpenter?
I frowned. No, not really, but I'm pretty sure he wouldn't approve of her going to a dance with anyone. My plan would be to not tell him.
Would that be Sarah's plan, though? She cares about face a little more than you do. She's proud to finally be a noble, and it's not just a dance. The winter ball is a big event. It's not just for our school, it's a city-wide event. All sorts of nobles are going to be there, and she'd probably want to be dancing with one of them.
I hadn't really considered that. Maybe the title meant more to her because she hadn't been born with it. Would she really care enough about status to turn down a friend for some kind of stupid school dance? Probably not, I decided. But she might be disappointed that she was going with a friend instead of someone she considered to be a worthy suitor. I scratched my chin. Did you want me to ask her on your behalf or something?
Oh, goddess, no! He held his hands over his eyes. I have something bigger to ask for, actually. Something I've been meaning to ask you anyway, outside of this.
I waggled my eyebrows at him.
What? You want to take me to the ball instead? He let out a weak laugh in reply. No, but I do have a serious request.
He stood from the bed,